This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Nice to see you. Thank you. Thank you. Hello and good evening. And I have a question. When topping your ball, hitting it into the water or making a triple bogey, have you ever had the sense that you've done it before? Exactly the same? Oh, hell yes. That's why I got out of the game. Deja vu suckage. It's interesting that deja vu, less the suckage, has its roots in the French language, while the deja vu I'm feeling tonight is Spanish. Sergio El Nino Garcia first appeared on this show in 2012. There was bullfighting and flamenco too. Sergio burst onto the international golf scene at the 1999 Ryder Cup, and he's won more than 30 times and was immortalized following his emotional victory at the 2017 Masters. Add Rafa Cabrera-Bello, a tenacious Ryder Cup competitor, a 2016 Olympian, and the muy guapo understudy of Spanish golf. Tonight, in the French Quarter of New Orleans, I sit down Sergio and Rafa, and there'll be no bullfighting or flamenco, not even a minuet. But the conversation is worthy of a grand ole, ole, ole. You two have been called the second coming of Ballesteros and Olazabal. Who's who?
He's older, so.
He's older, so he might be savvy. Yeah.
I think if we get to that, yeah, we'll both be very happy. You know, those are two big big players to.
Those are big shoes.
Those are big shoes to fill in.
Yeah, they are. Sergio, a lot has happened since your first appearance on this show in 2012.
Yeah, it's been amazing. There's no doubt that winning the Masters obviously was something spectacular. In 2017, but to be able to marry my best friend and you know the woman of my dreams was unbelievable. And then this year, welcoming our baby girl Azalea, it's pretty amazing.
Rafa, you're quickly becoming Spain's worst kept secret. Tell me a little bit about you.
I started playing when I was six. I grew up playing with my brother and my sister.
And this is in the Canary Islands?
In the Canary Islands, where I'm from.
How much golf is there in the Canaries?
At the time when we started, there were just two golf courses. Now it's up to seven or eight. In Gran Canaria, sorry, in the island where I live in.
Right.
In Tenerife has about 15 others, yeah, and the other islands have a few of them scattered out as well.
But growing up there, with very little golf, I mean, how do you get to be as good as you did?
I don't know, other kids would go play football, play basketball, or play ping pong or whatever at the club, and I would be always chipping and putting. So I really just love this sport. I've always been a person that I love to compete. I think in golf, if you like that thrill of getting better at something, it's a never-ending quest.
Well, Spain has got a great golf lineage. You know, we think of Olazabal, Ballesteros, names like Pinheiro, Garrido, Canizares, Garcia. Tell me a little bit about how these guys kind of inspired you.
Seve, I unfortunately missed his best years because I was too small to care about golf at the time. But I do remember watching lots of videos of him and who had a bigger impact as a teenager. Early teenager was Olazabal. I mean, I remember watching him win the 94 and the 99th Masters. That was very, very special for me as a Spaniard, and made me dream to one day maybe be a pro and be able to play in Augusta. And then obviously in the more recent years and early professional career, I mean, having Sergio as a friend, always giving me his honest and best advice, and just having a reference of a really, really world-class player to see and to improve and to play with, that has been very helpful, yeah.
Is there one quality that sort of runs through all of the Spaniards? I know that, you know, watching you early on in the Ryder Cup, I mean, it was just so passionate.
Yeah. I think that's passion is probably the
fighting spirit.
The first thing you can think of a Spaniard. You know, we got it in our blood, and that's what we all do.
You were borderline annoying, in fact.
But you were European at that time.
That's right. I was a European at that time. Yeah. Yep.
That's so true. I wasn't annoying to you yet.
Sergio Garcia has been competing in golf's majors since before he turned pro in 1999. His major career is highlighted by 13 top fives, including four runners-up finishes, and a thank God for that win for the ages at the 2017 Masters.
When you finally, you know, push through and win at the Masters, did it seem like you'd got to the top of a mountain?
To be totally honest, obviously it was amazing, and it was, as you could see, it was an amazing feeling and so much energy inside of me that wanted to come out. I think it was because I finally let go of the feeling of, if I don't win a major, it's okay. That kind of helped me maybe relax a little bit more, accept things, and throughout the whole week, it just felt right. But it did get a little bit tighter than I wanted on the back nine after bogeying 10 and 11. And then when I clipped the tree on 13 and went into the azaleas, funny enough.
Yeah.
13 was a massive hole, not only because of my par save, but because Justin didn't make his birdie. All of a sudden, you're looking from being four shots back to being two shots back, and it gives you a little bit of an extra boost. And then obviously I was able to play great coming in. The only thing I can do is put myself in situations to win it and you know, just wait for that right time to happen.
Rafa, tell me, what were you doing while he was winning?
I was beside Angela and his in-laws and his parents as well, with my wife, so it was really nice.
Who was more nervous, you think, him or you?
I mean, I think him, he just controlled it better than me, yes.
Speaking of the Masters, and I'm not sure that anybody else noticed this, but you made 13 at 15.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big number, obviously. How do you cope with that?
You know, it's one of those things, unfortunately, happens. And at Augusta, it can happen.
Yeah.
If you start getting the wrong kind of bounce, it can happen. You know, the way I looked at it, and I told Angela, I told my parents later on that night, I said, at the end of the day, it's just a matter of making history, you know? Last year, we made history one way. This year, we're making history another way. It's not the kind of history you want to make, but it's on the book. So the beautiful thing is that I get the chance of going there every year now, and it can happen more times. But,
yeah.
But hopefully also it can happen where I make eagle and it helps me win the tournament like it did in 2017.
Sergio and Rafa became Olympians in 2016, playing for Spain in golf's return to the Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. In front of the world, Rafa finished fifth with Sergio tied for eighth in a memorable Olympic tournament.
You got to play together at the Olympics. What do you recall of that?
There's a few moments that I really liked. The opening ceremony was very, very special. Walking into the Maracanã Stadium with over 100,000 people, surrounded by the best athletes in your country. I mean, sharing it with a friend as well. And then the experience of living in the village, the Olympic Village, sharing everything with all the other athletes. It was very, very cool.
Well, golf is getting another run in Tokyo in 2020. How do you both feel about being there?
I mean, I'd love to go back again. I mean, I think Tokyo's also going to be spectacular. I'm going to try my hardest to see if I can make it, and hopefully we can be there together again.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great experience. Like Rafa said, everything about that week, so different from our normal tournaments week in, week out, but at the same time, so special. So to have the possibility of being there in Tokyo, it would be fun to experience an Olympic Games there.
For professional golfers, competition is generally a solitary affair. Even victory in golf's coveted majors evokes little more than stuffy pomp and circumstance. How do you gloat in victory over the velvet fairways of an inanimate golf course? But in match play conditions, golf courses become the stage for epic competition. Add the pressure of playing for teammates, and there's nothing like the Ryder Cup. I soiled myself at the last one, and I was only a broadcaster.
Sergio, did you ever think that when you first stepped out onto that golf course at Brookline, your first Ryder Cup appearance, that you'd have a record that was similar to Ballesteros?
To be totally honest, I didn't. Obviously, it was so exciting to be a part of that Ryder Cup and to be able to join some of my idols in Ryder Cup history, you know, with Seve and Olathabal and stuff. But to have the same amount of points as him as of now, it's, you know, it's a dream come true, and, you know, it's been an unbelievable story, an unbelievable experience.
Rafa, when you watch the emotional energy that Sergio brings to the Ryder Cup, what does it do for you?
I mean, it's a huge motivation, obviously. I mean, it has been a childhood dream to always be part of the Ryder Cup team. Not just Sergio, but all the other Spaniards that have played in it. Some of my heroes and dearest friends as well.
Do you feel responsible in a way, you know, for sort of easing Rafa into the Ryder Cup or making sure that he...
Well, I mean, I tried to. And more than anything, what I wanted to do was for him to enjoy the Ryder Cup as much as I did. I think our match on Friday afternoon was great. We played great. He played unbelievable starting off the blocks. You know, first Ryder Cup match he's playing, and he was striping it.
What was it like teeing it up on the first?
It was a bit tense. I mean, luckily it was the four ball, so I didn't feel that much responsible. But I remember walking up to the tee and telling Sergio how huge honor it was for me to play my first match with him, and just to have fun, fight till the very last minute.
It was fun to be a part of it, to be next to a friend of yours, to see him giving some nice fist bumps, yeah. And so it was, you know, it was amazing.
Were you aware of the crowd? I'm not saying that it was hostile, but you're playing with one of the great Ryder Cup villains, as far as American fans are concerned. You know, this guy, you know, I mean, he's a nemesis.
We just notice it on every shot, on every hole only. But no, jokes aside, I mean, the crowd was there doing their job.
What do you expect? This year in France?
I want to experience the crowd on our side, yeah. As opposed to against that. I mean, I enjoyed the crowd against us as well. 99.9% of the crowd was fantastic. They were rooting for the U.S. Yeah. There's always that small percentage that I don't know why they take it personal. And
well, they'll be there in France.
They'll be here. Yeah.
I can see you're both looking forward to it. You can't keep the smile on. I can't either. It's the best event in golf.
Yeah, it is.
Well, this is Rapid Fire with Rafa Cabrera Bello and Sergio Garcia. Your amazing and presumably bilingual answers to my inanely stupid questions. Start the clock, please. what's your favorite liquid refreshment?
Strawberry lemonade. Raspberry lemonade, sorry.
Make your mind up. Favorite Spanish city?
Las Palmas.
I think Barcelona is amazing.
Yeah, oh, I love Barcelona. Your favorite American city?
I love Austin.
Well, I'm a Texan, as you can probably tell.
New York.
New York? I like New York too, yeah. Favorite golf course?
Pebble Beach.
Valderrama.
Sangria or siesta?
Both.
Sangria then siesta?
Yeah.
Exactly.
If you were a dog, what breed would you be?
Giant Schnauzer.
Giant Schnauzer?
Yeah.
I like the Labs.
If you were a car, what make or model would you be?
BMW.
I like the Formula Ones, so.
Formula One?
Just a Formula One car, yeah.
Boxers or briefs?
Commando.
Well, you three are a very smart pair. That's rapid fire. Nobody wins anything, stop the clock.
For Sergio and Rafa, love of the game found them as children. But how did they dare to dream of grown-up success on the PGA and European tours?
Your path to the professional game, when did you decide that you thought, whoa, you know, I think I could make a living doing this, or I would like to do it forever?
Well, I mean, like, obviously as a kid, you dream about it. Maybe around the age of, I don't know, 16, 17, you really start considering it a bit more serious. When I was 21, I turned pro.
How about your parents? Were they supportive? You know, do they think, oh, it's a good idea, my boy?
Yeah, I mean, they wanted me to do both, to go to college and then to keep playing golf and try it as a pro, but they wanted me to have a backup in case golf didn't work.
How did you two become friends?
When he started coming on tour, we got to see each other. We've always enjoyed each other's company. So we started playing a little bit together, some practice rounds, and it just kind of developed as it went on.
Yeah, funny story, in addition to what he's saying, I was 8 years old and he was 12. So we were playing the under 10 and under 12 Spanish amateur championship. Really, really long ago. And his mom, Consuelo, was my scorer on the Spanish under 10 championship. And she walked around with us. Obviously, they needed parents to help 8-year-olds keep track of their score. Consuelo was my score that day. And when I finished playing, he told my dad, oh, I have a son that is exactly like yours. He plays really good. He's playing on the other course in Club de Campo in Madrid. So that was the first time I met his mom before I met him. Yeah. So
it's a small world.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
What do you most admire about each other?
Other than the great body he has.
I was hoping we weren't going
wasn't,
there.
That wasn't good at all.
No, but I think that he's obviously a great player, but when you see him the first time, you might not think, oh, you know, he's not the most spectacular kind of player you can see. Not like a...
What do you mean?
No. Sorry. We're supposed to tell the truth.
Okay. This is good. I think we're getting somewhere here. Yes.
No, but I mean, like... Maybe not like a Phil Mickelson or a Tiger Woods or something like that. But I mean, even though he's a great player, he just works really hard, and you know, he never gets complacent. He's always trying, never giving up, and you know, that's important in not only in golf but in everything in life.
If you had to say something nice about him, what would it be?
I've been thinking all this time while he's been answering.
Trying to find something. I got nice eyes.
No, he's always. Yeah, for sure, but that's for your wife to tell you. I've always looked at him with this healthy envy. It's just like, man, how easy does it look when he does it? Just goes in the morning, does like a few stretches, it's a few chips, a few putts. And I remember this one time we played in Sweden in the summer. Well, it was supposed to be summer, but it might have been something like 44 in the 40s Fahrenheit that you guys use. And I had been like an hour and a half in the range trying to warm up, still frozen. And it was the time that he had the routine that he wouldn't hit balls. He'd just show up to the first tee. So
I did stretch and chip and putt
for sure. Yeah, all that. I did that too.
It was like 2011. The way I looked at it was whatever shot I hit on the first, good or bad, is the best shot I've hit all day. So I was trying to look at it in a positive way.
Early on in my career, I was playing in the Irish Championship at Royal Dublin, and there was a great old Irish player called Christy O'Connor Sr. And he was fond of a pint of Guinness or two. Mm-hmm. And I was hitting balls, and he came down, and he emptied his practice bag out, you know, beside me, and I could smell the whiskey. It was coming downwind, you know, a lot. And he took a couple of practice swings like this, farted, and said, "That'll do," and walked back, went in and had two pints of Guinness, went out and shot 66. And I warmed up for about an hour and a half and shot like 81. You know, and
That's a lesson to learn, right?
Practice something is overrated.
Yeah, absolutely.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor.
Why is Farmer supporting my show? Well, I've interviewed over 100 guests, ranging from legendary golfers to presidents to celebrities. And just like Farmers is smarter from their unbelievable but true experiences, from each of my interviews I've gained great knowledge that I can carry forward. Well, from most of them. Anyway, thank you, Farmers, for supporting my show.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right then, now back to the show.
Well, this is where we find out how much you know about each other. This is true or false. Sergio, true or false, Rafael's been cast as the big kahuna in a new movie, Gidget Goes Bali.
I'm gonna say false.
So seriously false. Sergio set a new world record for driver throws at the Valero.
False.
It wasn't a record, no. Rafa and his wife Sofia have been called the homeliest couple in golf.
Yeah, that's gotta be true.
No, that's false. Sergio's father-in-law, Marty, is a former country music star famous for his single Life as a Wishbone.
True.
No.
No.
In his younger years, Marty was actually an American football wishbone quarterback for the Texas Longhorns.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Sergio, Rafa won the Spanish national championship every year from the age of 7 through 18.
No, that's not true.
It is true.
Is it?
Yeah.
That record, I beat you.
7 through 18. Rafa, Sergio once said of movies he prefers action over romance because lovers on the screen bore him.
True.
That is
true. I hope it's true, actually.
It is true.
Good, yeah. Good.
More perfect than perfect is the way Rafa described you in 2016.
I'd like to say
true?
No, it's not. Rafa, in his playing debut for CF Boreal in September 2010, Sergio came off the bench to score the only goal in his team's 1-0 defeat of Sporting Ribarroja.
True.
No, he played for just 8 minutes and he was totally gassed. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Okay, that's true, false. On we go. Sergio, Jeff Ogilvie called you the best ball striker in the world for the last 20 years. Is he on target or is he full of shit?
He's full of shit.
I don't know. I think he's pretty close.
But I like him. But I like him.
Well, if you're not, who is?
Jeff Ogilvie.
No. No, he's pretty good, but no. Wouldn't be in that category.
I guess it's a nice compliment. I've heard it a couple of times here and there. Ball striking is usually one of my fortes.
Rafa, what makes him a great ball striker?
How easy he swings. I mean, just he can do whatever he wants. He can hit like a perfect high draw. He can hit a driver off the deck without warming up. his iron play is amazing. It's just how complete he is and how imaginative he is on every single shot. Yeah.
When do you feel the most pressure on the golf course and how do you cope with it? For me, it was always about controlling panic. I hated being in the lead. It was one of those things, you know, because great players love being in the lead.
In the lead. It's just, unfortunately, it doesn't happen as often as I would like to.
Well, see, that's what's going to make you great, is you want to be in a place where you know you're going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, totally. To me, I think probably the hardest moment is when things start going wrong, how to stop it.
How to fix it.
Yeah. When you're up on the lead or somewhere on the lead, you know you're playing well. So usually things go well. But when things start going wrong, how you can stop it as quickly as possible and overcome it. I think that's one of the
Seve was fantastic at that.
He was.
You know, he could fix it whenever, and it went wrong a lot with him. People forget.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how far offline he hit it and, you know, just how he got it back.
Yeah.
He's a magician.
Totally.
Golf's a funny game. Tell me a funny story.
I know that this one, Mark Alcabecchia will enjoy it because, funny enough, we were talking about it not long ago. And this one was at Augusta. And I was playing with him, I think it was on Friday, and he was doing fairly well. He was probably, you know, easily into the cut and probably like 2 or 3 under par and doing fairly well. So we get to 12, and he hits his tee shot and flares it a little bit, comes it, bounces short, spins back into the water. So he goes to the right, drops, hits his next shot, hits it too soft, and the thing spins it back in the water again. So drops again and hits his next shot. He hits it a little bit too soft again, bounces just short of the green, just on the green and stops there. So he gets to the green, hits his putt, and he doesn't hit a good putt. He hits it like a couple of feet short. And he goes to mark his ball, and he puts his hand in his pocket, and he's trying to get the coin out and he can't get the coin out and he's furious. So he can't get his coin out and he just goes like this. I mean, rips his pants, I'm telling you. You could see pretty much half of his leg. All his tees, his marker, everything is all over the green. And I'm looking at my putt. I mean, we're all there on the green. I'm looking at my putt. I'm kind of looking down, trying not to laugh. And we're all like giggling and stuff, and he's like picking up everything and marks it. But I mean, he played the last 5-6 holes with his pants. I'm telling you, they were ripped this much.
Was he commando?
No, I don't think so.
You've both had great triumphs and disappointments, but if you could take a mulligan anywhere in life, what would it be?
I mean, it's hard to pick one. I mean, it's hard to pick one. Fortunately, I've done many mistakes on and off the course. I wouldn't pick one on the golf course because that's way more insignificant than what happens outside with your life. But
I got one.
I don't know.
What do you got?
Doing a show with you.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
Mulligans in Life are presented by Farmers Insurance. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
Sergio, tell me about growing up as the middle child in your family.
It was fine. It was great. I think that I've been very fortunate with the family I have. My mom, my dad, how much they loved all of us and how much effort they put into all of us trying to achieve what we wanted to achieve, and in my case, to play golf for a living. I was very fortunate with that, and I never felt a middle child syndrome kind of thing.
Rafa, tell me about your sister, Emma. She's playing the European Tour, Ladies Tour?
She used to play Ladies European Tour. She's not playing full-time anymore. She'll play a couple events, but she's not. She's working now for the European Tour in London.
Oh, for the European Tour. All right, so it's a golfing family?
Yes, my brother Miguel is also a pro, and he's playing Alps Tour and a bit of Challenge Tour as well. So,
you two boys both have girls that would make a bad day seem a lot better, I think.
We're fortunate with that.
Yeah. Rafa, you're not a dad yet, but Sergio, you are recently. And what's that little girl teaching you?
It's just amazing to be able to come back home and see her and see that, you know, all your cares kind of go away and you know, kind of like at Augusta. Obviously, you know, I wasn't happy after making 13 on 15 and shooting 81 the first round as a defending champion, but once I got home and I saw my family and I saw Angela and I saw Azalea, obviously, you know, it makes it much better. It makes it easier to get over and you kind of forget about it and you start playing with her and really enjoying your time with her. And that's, you know, that's something that nothing else can provide that.
Rafa, what do you do when you're not swinging the club?
I try to be somewhere surfing if I can.
When did you start surfing?
We were playing a tournament in Asia, then I had a week off, and then we had a tournament for European Tour in Bali. So I said, okay, I'm not gonna go back to the Canaries just for 5-6 days and then come back. So I just went straight to Bali, and that week I got like 5 lessons. And I loved it. I just fell in love with the sport. I mean, standing up is easy. You just stand up pretty much on the first day. But then they keep giving you a smaller board.
Right.
So you just feel like you're on that first day many, many, many days.
I'm going to sound like I know something about this now. What's your favorite break?
My favorite break? I'm going to go, it's called Rifles. It's in the Mentawai Islands. Yeah,
but you're also a bungee jumper?
No, I mean, I've done it. I don't say I'm a bungee jumper. I've done it once. I did it with my wife in our honeymoon. I jumped first, so it's not that I pushed her off the cliff before me. I actually jumped first, so she could see that the jump worked.
Sophia jumped as well?
Sophia jumped with me as well, yes. I was the one that got her into doing it, and I was enjoying the build-up, actually. But then you get there, and they tie you up so quickly, and it's just like, okay, let's go jump. And then, like, I don't know, the brain starts playing mind games on you. It's just like, I'm actually, did you tie me properly? And it's like, no, you dumbass. I just asked you to jump without checking that everything that you're saying. I took the smallest steps of my life to this, I don't know, really, really small step that you had to get off to, and then just not thinking, just 3, 2, 1, and... down I went.
Caramba! Yeah. No, I don't think that's a good idea at all. Rafa, you and Sophia are keen on the photography. What do you like to shoot?
Lots of pictures of her, actually.
I can see that.
That was a good answer.
Yes.
That was a good answer.
So, I mean, like, have you studied photography in any way? You know, the lens.
I mean, I wouldn't say like study properly as getting a PhD or anything like that, but I have read several books about it, and I follow stuff of
photography. So it's
photography.
A hobby?
Yeah, it's a hobby.
Sergio, you love soccer and tennis, two sensible sports. You know, what's the biggest challenge about owning a team?
It's probably trying to get a good group of guys that are gonna, you know, fight hard for your team.
I remember I was with you in Boreal, the first show that we did, and you like to do a little workout with the guys. Do you still do that?
A little bit, yeah. I like to play a little bit with them.
Do they let you score?
No, they don't. I mean, sometimes I do score, but not because they let me.
On January the 1st, 2019, there are new rules coming. Pay attention.
Rule 13-1D. If you accidentally move your ball on the green, you can put it back without penalty. Hooray! Rule 15-1A, you can move loose impediments in the hazard and you'll be able to touch the ground with your hands or ground your club without penalty. Rule 13-2A, starting in 19, you can leave the flag in the hole when your ball is on the green and there'll be no penalty for striking it. 13-1C2, paragraph 4, subsection 3, little small print at the bottom. You can repair almost any damage on the putting green, including spike marks and animal damage, whatever that is. Rule 18-2, to speed up play, ball search time has been reduced from 5 to 3 minutes. Rule 4.3A4, seriously, one of my favorites, video and music will be allowed during a round as long as they don't create an advantage for the player. Bring on Rachmaninoff. No equipment changes yet. Should there be equipment changes?
We're all trying to make the game easier and better for amateurs. And it's kind of weird to have, you know, different sets of clubs or balls for professionals or amateurs. So I mean, that's you know, that's a tricky one, I guess.
Because I think as professionals, sometimes we forget that the amateurs are actually the most important people in the game. They're the people that's why we all have a job here doing this.
Yeah. So we want to make the game as good and as easy for them as possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't change the equipment. I mean, why go back? I mean, every other sport is evolving. It's getting better. It's getting more. I mean, it's more advanced. So why should we go backwards in golf?
Do you play for business or pleasure these days?
I play for pleasure. Obviously, it is what we do for a living. But I've always had the mentality that once you make it too much of a business, then it becomes not fun, and then you're usually looking sign to go way down. So, you know, the more fun you can make it, and the less you can worry about, you know, if I'm making 50,000 here or 60,000 there, then you know, the better it is for yourself.
And yourself, Rafa?
Yeah, I mean, I just play because I like it. I mean, that's how I grew up with it. I love to compete, and I mean, not ever once you've been thinking about the money here or there. Just try to play to try to win, try to finish as good as you can, and the rest is a bonus that we would happily do without as well.
Well, I think you're both too talented, way too smart, and a lot of fun to watch. Thank you both for being here with
Thanks
me in New
that
Orleans.
That
These best amigos are strikingly married now. Not to each other, though. El Nino is a father for the first time, and Rafa is still on the practice tee. While the game still has its roots in stiff upper lip British restraint, the more emotionally exuberant Spanish variety is in very good hands with Sergio and Rafa. Throw in Miguel Ángel Jiménez and young John Ram, and as the late, great Dick Enberg would have said, oh my. Sergio and Rafa are always appreciated as heroes wherever they play, except, of course, the Ryder Cup. But that's good for them and good for the game. Well, that's all for tonight. Thanks for joining the Fiesta. Now it's time for my siesta. Follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Good night, everyone. Good night, Faherty. Thanks for joining me, Faherty fans. You can find more of the Faherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Faherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Faherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.